Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome into the Autzen Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Prairie, Eric Scopel on the show as always, and we've got a commitment show. It's been a busy week from a recruiting standpoint for the three biggest programs that we follow: football, men's and women's basketball. All three programs had probably, when you combine everything up, Eric, what, 25 or so visitors on campus. It was a pretty jam-packed weekend for all three programs.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know the exact count. We probably could do it pretty easily between the three programs. And yeah, it's got to be close to a couple dozen. And it's not just a couple dozen nobodies. It's a couple dozen really big recruits for each program. And we've got all that information on DuckTerritory.com from a visitor list perspective. But it was advantageous too, because as we're going to talk about in this podcast, a couple of the programs added some pretty significant verbal commitments. And yep. And for women's basketball, it got the first one in the class to kind of get things rolling. So a successful start to June again. And we talked about it before. They finally lifted the restrictions. And I think all three programs really took advantage of that this past week.
Yeah. We'll start with the women's team from a basketball's perspective. The football program also landed a verbal commitment. We'll go in chronological order here. And Jenna Asai is the first person to commit while on her visit this past weekend or this week. A four-star prospect in the 2022 recruiting class out of the state of Arizona, a guard. Eric, what can you tell us about – you spoke with her. What can you tell us about her and what? Why did she choose Oregon? What did Kelly Graves and his coaching staff do to deliver the big news here?
Yeah, first off, there's a full story with quotes from Jenna up on DuckTerritory.com. So if you're unfamiliar, you want to kind of get all the details, you can go there to check that out. But I will provide some of the details here. First off, nobody's been able to visit campus. And I think for a lot of these players, and you're going to see this, they were just kind of waiting, to get on campus before they could make a decision. Jenna told me that Oregon was always the favorite and that they always let – she hadn't even scheduled – a second or third official visit this month, which she obviously could have done. She was on campus the first day of June, came to Oregon, and then committed a couple days later. And she said, like, basically if the boxes were checked, which they were clearly, she was going to commit. So it all kind of aligned. She talked about the relationships with the coaches. She had some pre-existing relationships with some of the players and families. And I think it's kind of interesting, hearing her talk about the way the other families recruited her family. And I don't know if that typically happens with sports. And I don't know how much we talk about that, but this is maybe an angle later, but how some of the parents of other players currently on the roster had kind of reached out and already knew Jenna Asai's family and kind of, hey, Oregon's a really good fit. She should come join the program. And that played a little bit of a role. And then I think a big part was Kelly Graves stuck with Jenna despite two knee injuries. She tore her ACL her freshman year down in Arizona, and then actually tore her meniscus in February of this year. And, Oregon didn't back off. They stuck with her. And she said that felt significant, just that they trusted her and her rehab. And she says she's back 100%. So I think that part certainly is beneficial too. And then just kind of the last two components that she said she has two goals for herself in basketball. She wants to win a national championship in college, and she wants to play in the WNBA. And to her, Oregon was a perfect fit for both of those. Oregon was obviously very close recently to winning and competing for championships. And because of those players on that roster, they sent three in the first round a couple of years ago and two of the top picks. And so she sees kind of that path there. So that's kind of a couple of things I think played a role here. And for Oregon, I think a really good get to start this class. 6 foot, I think fairly broad in terms of her build and somebody who can really get to the rim effectively and is really good defensively too, average over 3 steals per game last year.
How do you feel like she fits into the core group of guards that Oregon's got on this roster right now? Because when she arrives on campus mm-hmm. for the 2022-2023 season. A lot of Oregon's current guards right now will still be on campus.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody could be in theory on the roster right now. You know, a lot of things will change, but yeah, I think it's she's not overly similar to anyone else already on the team. Like maybe the closest fit would be like a Maddie Shear, but I don't know if they're that similar because Maddie is more of like a playmaking guard and who's maybe a little bit better of an on-ball defender, whereas Jenna is more of an off-ball. You know, not a fantastic three-point shooter. That's an area she told me she wants to work on, but really, really good at getting to the rim. You know, good mid-range game, can kind of score more from the two-point range than from three. And defensively, as I said, she's really aggressive in the passing lane. I don't know if she's like quite the same level as Maddie Shear in terms of an on-ball defender. So those are kind of some of the things there. So I think it's an interesting fit in terms of she doesn't feel like the same type of player that anyone else on the roster is. And I think you looked at a couple of players that transferred this offseason, and you could probably argue that Taylor Chavez, Jazz Shelley, and Taylor Mike Sell, I don't think any of them were like identical with each other, but that there were some similar traits and overlaps there that made them kind of, choose my words carefully, I don't want to say redundant because that seems really mean, but like that just made it so it was hard for them to all play together because they all did similar things. I think Jenna Asai is different from Oregon's current players on the roster. And I think that's beneficial. I think it'll be interesting to sort of see where the program's at and kind of, you know, who's still on the team when that takes place, because I'm assuming you'll probably see some players leave. But I think where things are at right now, I think it's a really, really good fit. And it starts off this class on a really good note because you need to get that first domino, and Jenna Asai is a pretty darn good first domino to knock over.
Yeah, I was just going to say, she's the first of – I don't know how many recruits they're going to sign, Eric, in the 2022 class, but she is the first. She's the 35th best player overall in the country. Kelly Graves continues to pull in really good guard prospects. Real quick, before we turn it over to football, I guess what's kind of the focus for this class, you feel like? What's next for them to find? If they need to find one or two more players, what are the attributes they need to have when they go to target these players?
I think they need a lead guard. They need a point guard without question. Tahina Paopao will be on the roster in 2022-23, but there's a chance that could be her last year or her second to last year, depending upon if she decides to go pro early, which is a possibility. And she's obviously going to be your lead guard for the foreseeable future. I think Oregon needs to go get another one in this class. Chance Gray, who was on campus recently, is a five-star, one of the best point guards in this class, would make an awful lot of sense. If that's the way it plays out, that's a huge win for this program in terms of continuing this stretch of really good guard play and point guard play. So I think that's important. There's some other players out there that they're in on that, you know, besides Chance Gray that they could land. And I think they really do need a couple, maybe one to two big players, because I look at Sedona Prince and I look at Nira Sabali, and I think this next year could, in theory, be their last year. And if it's not, it could be the year after that. So you do need to kind of retool and reload in the front court. Outside of Prince and Sabali, you have a few players who are of that size who can play the center position. You know, you've got an incoming signee in Filipina Che at 6'8", and you've got Kylie Watson, who's going to be in her second year next year, and she's about 6'5". And that's kind of all you've got behind those top two. So going and finding a 6'5", 6'6", 6'7" player who could play center, who could play power forward, I think that's another, you know, angle to look into. Oregon had a couple of players that kind of fit that mold on campus this past week. Grace Van Sluten and Kennedy Basham being 6'7" would fit kind of the center role. Maybe Van Sluten's more of a, you know, power forward, small forward type of player. But I do think you need a lead guard and you need someone who's big to fill out this class. And I don't think it's going to be just a three-player class. Like, I don't think it's just two additions. I think it's probably going to be closer to three or four. But again, some of that's going to depend upon what happens over the next 6 to 8 months with players staying or leaving.
Right. From a football perspective, let's transition now over here. They landed a verbal commitment, and it came from three-star defensive lineman Sir Mels, a player that will most likely end up being kind of your key cog in the middle of your defensive line, a nose tackle, defensive tackle, if you will. Oregon, 24/7 Sports, we've kind of adjusted our recruiting rankings and positions, and no longer do we have defensive ends and strong side defensive ends or weak side defensive ends or nose tackles or D tackles or outside linebackers for that matter. It's edge players, and those are outside linebacker, defensive end type body types. And then we have D linemen, guys that are, I guess, probably your D tackle, your nose tackle, and maybe even like what traditionally would be like your strong side defensive end type guy, like an Austin Folio, if you're kind of looking for a player comp. Sir Mills is a defensive lineman. Oregon's looking at him as a nose tackle, defensive tackle for the Ducks. 6'4", 310-pound prospect, Liberty High School in Henderson, Nevada, just outside of Las Vegas. And this is a big get, Eric. I know you and I are both very high on him, despite a 3-star ranking, just because his body type, his talent, it doesn't happen. There's not a lot of these types of players out West. And yep, he is one of the best defensive linemen out West. And Oregon went out and got his verbal commitment after his official visit. Or I should say during. He committed during his visit.
I was going to go exactly where you went in terms of my first instinct here is, hey, Oregon does not typically have interior guys from Pac-12 footprint. You know, usually they, I mean, you think about it. Jordan Scott was their starting nose tackle for 4 years. He's from Florida. The guys competing this year for those type of positions, guys like Brandon Dorlis and Christian Williams, interior guys from Florida and Tennessee. And there are some other guys on the team. Keon Ware Hudson and Popo Mabe are both from California. So there's obviously some success there, but Oregon has had a lot of times to go out of its footprint to get big bodies, to get interior defensive linemen, and frankly, sometimes bigger bodies on the offensive line too. I have had to leave the West. So to get somebody who's within, you know, it's from Nevada, it's not very far away, a player who obviously a lot of Pac-12 schools were very high on. Washington offered a scholarship, had a verbal commitment before Oregon jumped in a couple months ago. I think that sort of speaks to the value of a player like Sir Mills. You know, if he's, you know, if he's in SEC country, maybe he's not quite as high of a priority because they've got so many big bodies who are 6'4", 310 like he is. But out West, he's a really prime target for a lot of these programs just because you don't have a lot of guys with his body type and athleticism. And I think, frankly, he's 6'4", 310, and he moves really well. And I know his ranking is his ranking, and I'm going to respect those who do it because they know what they're doing more than I do. But I look at him and think, this is a guy who maybe he's not an instant, immediate impact player, but who I'm not going to be like surprised at all by the time he's done at Oregon if he's a, you know, a player who's really contributed at a high level, who's maybe started towards the back end of his career, who's maybe been a key reserve before that. I think he's a high-end player. And again, the fact that you can get a 310-pound interior lineman from, you know, a couple states away rather than having to go to the Southeast is, I think, just a big win in and of itself.
Blair Anguillo, our Mountain and Hawaii region analyst for 24/7 Sports, he actually popped on to DuckTerritory.com and mentioned that had a junior season been able to go forth and be played in its a normal capacity, and if the camp circuits had been able to go through last year, that he felt like Sir Mills would have been higher ranked. It's just his 3-star ranking right now is, and this is where I'm speaking now.
Sure.
Is in part because there weren't opportunities to evaluate him, and he could be a player as a senior. And if he goes out and does some of these camps that are starting to pop up this summer, and then does a really good job in the fall in Nevada high school football, he could see his ranking go up. And, you know, so there is traction here of a player that Oregon's getting that he's a 3-star now, but it might change. You know, there is that possibility where he gets that ratings bump. And nonetheless, 3-star, 4-star or not, I think the fact that a good chunk of Pac-12 schools offered him, when you look at the schools that offered him, it's a good sign there as well. And on top of that, like Eric and I have said, he's one of the best guys at the position in the region. You always want to sign those, you know, those types of players. And it's a state now, Eric, in Nevada, where just like Arizona a couple years ago, just like Utah is right now, Oregon seems to be kind of developing a little bit of a niche here in the state of Nevada over the last couple of years. In the 2021 class, they signed Maliki Matavo. There's a story up on duckterritory.com on Monday that Eric wrote about him and his impact in spring football. You go back to the 2020 class, and Oregon went into Nevada again and signed Jackson LeDuc. So it's a state that is starting to produce more and more signees or verbal commitments for Sir Mills' perspective for the Ducks.
And how about this? I mean, talk about a loaded state. Sir Mills is the 12th best player in the state of Nevada, according to the 247 composite rankings. And he's a guy that Oregon got a verbal commitment from, that Washington had a verbal commitment from, and they think there's 11 players better in that state. And that just speaks to why that's a place to put some effort in. And Oregon had a couple of them on campus this weekend too. Cyrus Moss is the second best player in the state. And we talked about him a little bit, and this is probably as close as you can get to a Kayvon Thibodeau replacement in this class. And that's certainly, from what we've seen, you know, heard on the ground, was part of the pitch. And then Robbie Snelling, a linebacker, is the 8th best player from the state. He was also on campus. He plays baseball as well. It's a state where you're going to see Oregon really push. And I, you know, it's been notable, as Matt said, the way that they've, I guess, expanded in kind of the mountain region and really hit up Arizona and Utah and had a ton of success. And they've kind of started to do that in Nevada. This year's class, because there's so many good players in Nevada. Like I said, I mean, Cyrus Moss is a heck of a player, a top 50 player. He's a second best player in that state. Zion Branch, a safety, who Oregon I know has also been recruiting along with his brother, is a guy who's the best player in the state. So another state that's having a really strong year that Oregon hasn't always had a ton of success with, but it looks like they're turning it around a little bit. And I think the fact that you've now seen that happen in Arizona and Utah before, and now it looks like, you know, and again, Mills is one commitment, but if they have a bunch of success in Nevada, I think that just speaks to the fact that the staff can really recruit anywhere whenever they need to. And when there's a big prospect that's kind of within, you know, a flight distance, they're not going to be easy to beat for those guys.
It's interesting how the dominance has migrated. It started in SoCal under Mario Cristobal.
Yeah.
And then it kind of moved east a little bit to Arizona, and then it moved up to Utah, and now it's going into Nevada. It's really interesting to watch that. Oregon's still strong in SoCal. I mean, we've had Greg Biggins on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned how, you know, SoCal and the San Diego area in particular, San Diego specifically, has kind of turned into duck country. You know, like all the big dogs that are coming out of that area are leaning heavily towards Oregon. And you look at Nevada, it's starting to go that way. Oregon's got a strong reputation in the Phoenix metro area.
Yeah.
They've got a really, really tight vice grip right now on the state of Utah. For whatever reason, the last couple of seasons, I'm sure Penei Sewell has helped in that regard, Noah Sewell. But they've really tightened their grip there, and it's starting to spread a little bit. And this is kind of what's fun about following recruiting is, at a year-to-year perspective, you don't see this, but when you start stacking year after year after year and you start looking at the growth and the spread of a program's pull, we're starting to see that play out. Sir Mells being the latest guy as Oregon dips into the state of Nevada for a verbal commitment. Now, he was one of about 13 players that was on campus this past weekend for an official or an official visit. Oregon had a handful of guys fly in for officials, and then they also had a couple of guys in the area swoop in for unofficial visits on their own dime for the day. And that period is also going to play out, you know, as of Monday, June 7th, when we recorded this podcast, 2023 three-star offensive lineman Landon Hatchett will be on campus. June 8th, four-star 2022 prospect corner Toriano Pride will begin his official visit. A couple days later, Jackson Boy, a three-star defensive end, will begin his official visit. So we're now in that stretch where it feels like every single day there's going to be some prospect on campus. And it started with this weekend with 13 guys on campus. Big names, Eric already mentioned Cyrus Moss, a four-star edge player. Oregon's recruiting him as a defensive end. He's, I believe, the highest rated four-star prospect in the country. Oregon commits Landon Hullaby and Steven Johnson. Hullaby, a four-star safety. Johnson, a three-star wide receiver. Both guys, I felt like, Eric, this was – we'll talk about these two in particular. It was very important for Oregon, I think, to get these guys on campus quickly because you didn't want to see them – hey, you know what? I'm going to go out to Texas A&M for an official visit, even though I'm committed to Oregon, and check things out. And oh, wow, this A&M visit was pretty cool. I had a great time. I think I'm going to go check out maybe now Oklahoma or Oklahoma State and go out there. And, oh, I had another great time at this school. You know what? I'm going to back off my commitment to Oregon. I still like Oregon a lot, but I want to just open things up and really kind of consider other schools. I think it was critical to get these two guys on campus, and it looks like, it sounds like Oregon kind of dominated and blew them both away in terms of what they're committed to right now.
Right. I mean, you want to solidify these commitments and you want to lock them in. And it sounds like that's the case. And I think you're right in terms of, especially guys from like a state like Texas or a state that's a little bit further away, you know, that haven't been on the campus before. You really want to make sure they get there before they see anything else, is my perspective, because now everybody is comparing their program to Oregon, and Oregon can really set the bar high with its facilities, and it can really set the bar high with its coaching staff and the energy there. And frankly, just the talent on the team. I think you can set the bar very, very high there. And I'm not saying you can't go to a school, you know, talk about Johnson and Hullaby in the state of Texas and find something comparable with some of those other, you know, the facilities, staff and players, but you can certainly make it very difficult for other schools because of the way Oregon presents itself. I mean, they have a lot of advantages. And so to get that first visit, I think it makes sense. It makes it, I think, challenging for other schools to come in and try to swoop in, which you know they're going to, especially with players of this caliber from that state, with everything that's, you know, in the surrounding region. So I think big start there. And we mentioned it before, there are a couple of other visitors from the state of Texas. I think, you know, I made note of this, I think, when we were previewing the visiting weekend about a week ago, of, I think it's pretty significant to, when you host visitors, to have at least a couple of guys from the same region around so that they can envision themselves being, you know, kind of living this together, because it can be a tough ask to ask an 18-year-old kid to move from across the country by himself. Right. But if you can say, hey, you're going to move out here, but hey, here are two or three of your guys that maybe you know beforehand, maybe you don't, but at least from the same area that you might be playing with, I think that certainly benefits, you know, the Ducks and trying to sway somebody from across the country and bringing in Johnson and Hullaby together, along with a couple of other players from the state of Texas, I think is both beneficial for the guys committed, but also those that are taking it in for the first time and that are still looking at other schools.
Other players on campus that are really kind of generating a buzz right now. I think we have to start with a linebacker prospect that was at one time committed to Stanford for baseball. He's a two-sport athlete. He plans to play both baseball and football in college. Robbie Snelling, we mentioned it in Nevada with Sir Mels. He's from Reno. Steve Wiltfong, our 24/7 Sports national recruiting analyst, he's actually thrown in the first crystal ball for Snelling to commit to Oregon. Four-star linebacker, 6'3", 200 pounds. He's rated as an athlete, but Oregon likes him as a linebacker. Ken Wilson, the linebacker's coach, is recruiting him as the primary assistant for Oregon. He's got a couple other visits lined up, so it doesn't sound like a commitment's going to happen in the immediate future. He's going to go check out Texas on the 11th, and then on the 18th, he's going to go check out Arizona. And then he'd like to maybe host an official visit to, or, you know, host a couple more official visits in the fall. We'll see what happens there, but it wouldn't surprise me, Eric, if Robbie Snelling ends up giving a verbal commitment, maybe end of June to Oregon after he sees those two other programs. And this is an interesting prospect that I think is just touching his potential.
Kind of similar to the Robbie Ashford thing, where you are going to have to be wary of, is he going to take a peek at the MLB draft at the end of this or something? Because from what my understanding is, he's a top tier baseball player as well. And Oregon is recruiting him for both sports with that in mind. I always get a little nervous just because you can, in theory, sign that contract and go pro. Oregon baseball fans know that full well, because I haven't looked at the last couple of classes, but I remember, you know, obviously, like, I think was it Belling, you know, Cody Bellinger was an Oregon baseball commitment, but he ends up signing at a high school. I mean, there's a bunch of other guys like that who maybe didn't make it quite as far as he did that are stuck in the minors, or maybe players that are in the majors, but you see that happen. So I'm always slightly wary of that, but you know, this is a really exciting athlete from my perspective. And Oregon obviously has had a ton of success at linebacker the last couple of cycles. And I'm not saying Snelling's going to be a better prospect than a lot of guys Oregon has signed, because Oregon has some five-star caliber players on campus right now. But this would be a player who would be, I think, a difference maker. And maybe reminds me a little bit of Jackson LeDuc. And maybe that's just because they're both, you know, similar size, both from the state of Nevada. But I think a guy who, boy, you can work with him. I could see him probably being somebody who's athletic enough to play a number of different spots at linebacker, probably not ever going to be athletic enough to play like in the defensive backfield, but certainly somebody who I would be very high on if Oregon did land, and would be very curious to see kind of what his role with the Ducks ends up being. And frankly, how does he juggle two sports if he does pick Oregon? We just saw Robbie Ashford kind of focus on football after starting with both.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him from a baseball perspective. He's made the decision to open things up from a football standpoint. It's kind of where his focus is going, but he's going to have some kind of a role in baseball, and it'll be interesting to see how that transpires for wherever he lands after that. A couple other players that Oregon has had a really, really strong impression on early on. We know Cyrus Moss has loved it. He showed up Saturday, and then I think he leaves today on Monday. Really big time player for Oregon. Cyrus Moss being recruited to basically replace Kayvon Thibodeau when Thibodeau declares for the NFL draft after this upcoming season. Which, by the way, Eric, we should probably mention this. Over the weekend, Thibodeau went on Instagram and posted a photo that he had graduated from the University of Oregon. He got a degree, 3-3, and basically said he's out after the upcoming season. You know, 3-out is what the caption titled was, meaning 3 seasons and off to the NFL. So it's not official, but it's basically kind of officially, unofficially official that Kayvon Thibodeau will be playing his last season at Oregon this fall, which we kind of all expected, right?
I was going to say, I think that was the case in like 2019 when he signed. It was kind of like, he'll be here 3 years and he'll bounce. But by the way, huge ups to him for getting a degree in
2.5 years.
I was going to say not even three full years. That's crazy. It took me 4.5 years to do it, and I didn't play sports. So kudos to Kayvon for getting it done like half the time. I don't know how he does that. Obviously, they have a little different schedule. They're staying on campus maybe and doing summer classes, but that's impressive. Anytime one of these guys graduates in less than 3 years, I don't know how they do it.
Other players that – I'm not going to say he's going to commit to Oregon, but certainly something to watch. Cameron Williams, 4-star offensive tackle from Duncanville, Texas. He is an offensive tackle, right or left. He is massive, 6'5". 360 pounds. He was here for an official visit. He's going to go check out Oklahoma on the 18th. He's going to then go to Texas on the 25th. Miami is another school he's seriously looking at for an official visit. But right now, I kind of wonder, is it maybe those three, Oklahoma, Oregon, and Texas? And can Oregon maybe do something that they don't typically do? And that's pluck one of the state of Texas's best players from the two premier programs in that region, Oklahoma and Texas.
Yeah. I mean, hey,
it's going to be tough sledding.
It's going to be tough, but I mean, the fact that it sounds like all indications are very positive after those visits. And we just talked about trying to pair some of these kids together from that state. It would be massive. It would be massive. And I think, not that they need to build pipelines to the state of Texas, because I know that they've had some success there and they've made some hires that have also had some success there, but it's not necessarily an area that they've hit very hard in the last couple of classes. And if they can go out and get, I don't know, 3 to 4 of these guys, and they're all high end players, that, and I should note that like these are top tier kids, you know, and not that Oregon hasn't historically gotten that, but you've seen in the past, certainly sometimes when they reach into some of these other regions, they're taking players that some of the in-state schools have maybe passed on or maybe prioritized other players, and you're getting a, you know, a mid three-star player. That's not what these guys are. these are some of the best players at their position in the country. And for Oregon to be positioning themselves to be in the conversation is huge. And again, it's going to be tough with the schools that you're going to be up against that have the proximity advantage.
Yep.
But who knows, you know, they're going to shoot their shot. And it sounds like what we've heard, very positive first offerings with those guys.
No school in the country better promotes offensive linemen than Oregon. So Mario Cristobal, Alex Mirabal, they will always have Oregon essentially locked in with the nation's best offensive line recruits in the country. We'll wrap it up with this. Oregon's recruiting class now sits with 9 verbal commitments. 4 of those players are 24/7 Sport composite 4-star recruits. 5 of them are 4 of them are 3-star. 1 of them, Percy Lewis, is unranked, a junior college transfer. That when that ranking gets finalized for Percy Lewis, Oregon's ranking will go up even more. They currently rank first in the Pac-12. And if that trend holds, 4th straight year that they've done that. And they've now moved up to 18th in the country. Previous year, they were 6th in the country, best recruiting class in program history. And right now it's trending, Eric. It's slowly going there, but it's trending where Oregon's going to probably get into that top 15, top 10 class range once again from a national perspective.
Yeah, what are you projecting, Matt, in terms of where this class rounds out? And I ask that in part not to be critical, because this is the very early stages of the class, and as you said, they're probably about half full right now. But from an average ranking, currently 89.20, that's significantly less than the last couple cycles. Last year was the best ever, 92.37. Yeah. Probably going to be difficult to get there. But like, are you expecting this class to be fairly comparable to what we've seen the last, you know, 3 or 4 years under Cristobal, or are you concerned a little bit just because the average rating is lower than it has been before?
I think the average rating right now is a little bit lower than it has been just because Percy Lewis isn't ranked. We've already got Blair Anguillo, who's on that recruiting ranking council, coming out saying Sir Mills would be higher ranked if camps, you know, had been able to be gone through last year. So I'm not too worried yet. I do think it'll probably be tough to get into that top 5, top 6, top 7 range because they're not going to sign probably a full class of 25 guys, at least right now. Maybe things change and that opens the door for it. But I do expect, I think it's a fair expectation that this program finishes inside the top 15. And I think it's very realistic that they have a top 10 class, like 10, 9, or 8. In terms of players are going after, some of the guys that are going to, you know, see some rating bumps, guys that they're trending for, it could very easily climb into that top 10 perspective. So I'm not too concerned right now. Now, you are right, though. Their average rating is considerably lower than what it was the previous year. I mean, it's like 3 points lower than it was the year before. So that is something to look into. But like I said earlier, Percy Lewis, and this is no fault to him. He has nothing to do with this, so I'm not trying to say it in a negative way, but his unranking, his no ranking value is weighing down Oregon's recruiting class right now. You know, you throw in even like a high 3-star ranking to him, and Oregon's ranking will go up. So I'm not too concerned at this moment right now. I think it'll improve.
Just to provide a little context before we sign off, the 2019 and 2020 classes were 0.9060 average rating and 0.9019 average rating. So slightly above where we're at now. And those were both classes that finished right around the top 10. So I put that out there to say, I made note of 0.8920 being significantly lower than the 21 class. It's not that far off the pace that they were a couple of years before that, and both those classes ended up right around the top 10. So I just say that so those listening are like, oh, don't overreact and think this is going to be a class that finishes like 23rd or something. It is somewhat notable though that the average rating is slightly lower, and as Matt says, there's good explanation for that as well.
It's gonna do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. We really appreciate everyone for listening to the show. Continue to download it. on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, whatever you have as well. No YouTube video this week because we're not doing video this week. We'll get back to that here shortly, but that is something for you to look forward to down the line. You've been listening to another edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.